Today is February 26th, 2018, and we are at Mary Ann's apartment at Raven's Landing. I'm Terry Spires, and I'm here to do the interview. Thanks for coming today. We appreciate you sharing your story with the archives and eventually, hopefully, with all people coming in the future who read the book that will be here at Raven's Landing. We'll start with a little biological information and information. Can you tell me where and when you were born?
I was born in London, England.
Oh, you were.
In 1934, June 19th. And my parents are both British, so as I was born there, I'm British. I was born in a nursing home, which I said once and realized that that's not the terminology used anymore, but it was where women went to have children and learn how to nurse their babies, right, which they have to do at home now. It was in North London, and my dad was working for Western Electric, and so they lived in London. When I was 2 years old, his work moved him to New York City. So I had one younger sister who was a year younger than I was, and the family moved to America, traveled on a ocean liner called the Paris, HMS, well, wouldn't have been HMS, but French ship. And my dad went to work in New York City, and we lived in Rye, New York, about a half-hour train ride he took every day to the city. And we were there until I was 14, and he retired. So I went to school in America for the first 8 years. I sort of brag that I was bilingual at the time, speaking English at home and American at school. But I've retained very little of my English accent, but over there we were all called Yanks, and no, that's out of context. So my mother was born in a family of 8 children, 4 boys and 4 girls, and her father was a haberdasher. And he owned a haberdashery shop, which is a mini department store, but the shop grew and grew into a very large and successful department store. My dad was born in London, and he was 18 years older than my mom, but seemed to work out perfectly. My dad he was probably mid-40s when they married, and he had quite a lot of jobs, mostly with, he was an electrical engineer, educated in England at Imperial College in London, and went to work for Western Electric, and they had him working in Europe, and he was back in England when he met my mother, and they married. And so then they sent him to New York. But I have to go back to the early 20s. He was working on various projects, but for Western Electric, including military work during the First World War. He was in Texas then, so he was back and forth. Working on radar for military guns, tracking airplanes, I guess. Then he got into working with speech, and then he got into working with recording speech, and then he got into trying to synchronize sound with films, and he worked. He was in America then, and worked with the Warner Brothers movies, and with Vitaphone Records, figured out how to synchronize film and records. And these were 16-inch records that played from the inside out. And
wow, I never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, I've got one of the records. But the first film they made with sound was Don Juan, and they recorded music, which is what they used to do in film theaters. They would play organ or piano and just enhance the movie. So, but the next one they worked on was the jazz singer, and Al Jolson was a very famous movie star back then. So they, it was a silent film, so that you saw part of the film, and then you would have a slide on the screen with words to tell you something about what was going on. And they used Al Jolson's singing in the movie and synchronized the sound, and that was pretty impressive. And then, but then he, being a very egotistical star, shouted out his famous phrase about "You ain't heard nothing yet," and then later on in the film, he came home. It's a story about his very religious Jewish rabbi father and religious parents, and he came home and he was talking to his mother and playing her "Blue Skies" on the piano and singing to her, and then he turned around and said, "Oh, you're so pretty, Mama. You've got such a pretty dress on." And he kept just ad-libbing like that. And they cut it and re-filmed it. And he kept doing that. So finally they said, "Oh, just leave it in and nobody will notice." But when it did open in theaters, it was a big success. So that's his biggest, one of his biggest accomplishments. And he was in charge of the development of that. My mother was a stay-at-home mom, and
she was born in
England. She was born in England, in Kent, southeastern England. Mm-hmm. And I didn't mention my dad's parents. His dad was a clockmaker in London, not very successful, apparently. My grandmother was a concert pianist. So my dad was a musician, played several instruments. So we came to the States when I was 2 and went through elementary school and then went back to England because my dad retired. And so I finished school in England, and we had had another sister just a year younger than my middle sister, and then 9 years later had a brother. And we...
So there were three of you?
There were four of us.
Oh, four, okay.
Three sisters, one, two, three in a row, and the brother later. And so we all went back to England and finished school there. And I went to work. I went to after regular school, which goes on 2 years longer than American schools at that time. And so you had a sort of a high school graduation level and then 2 more years. And then I went to a secretarial school and came out of it a typist, and I never did go to college. So I thought about it, but by the time I really thought about it, I decided I was too old, and I wasn't very old at the time. it's probably when I came back. I had a few jobs in England, but I saved money and decided I had enough money to take a ship to America to visit people we'd known mm-hmm. here. And my dad insisted I get a green card so that I could work if I wanted to. So I came over and stayed in New York with friends of the family that had been kind of aunts and uncles to us. And then visiting my youngest sister for Christmas, she and her husband, who was a Link aviation technician, found out they were going to be stationed in Alaska for a year, and they brought me. I asked if I could come for the ride, and so I came for the ride, and that was in 1957. No, 8. That was in 8. I came to America in 57. And came. They stayed a year, and I stayed. So it's been 60 years this year.
In Fairbanks the whole time?
In Fairbanks wow. the whole time.
Well, we know what brought you to Alaska. That was the next question. And what did you do while you were here? What did you do to support yourself? What kind of career or work did you do?
I couldn't say I had a career, but I had a lot of jobs.
Uh-huh. Right?
And so I my first job was typing leases at the land office for oil and gas leases and working for a fellow in who had a brokerage in Anchorage. And I would take a typewriter into the land office and just copy type and send them down to him. And I fell into that apartment, I mean into that job, and fell into an apartment in the, on the ninth floor of the Polaris building because the travel agent, I mean the real estate agent, excuse my, that helped my brother-in-law and sister find a place to live. She inadvertently said, well, if you can't find a place, you can come and share my apartment. And I took her up on it. I'm sure she didn't think I was going to. But then she got transferred to Anchorage, and I got the apartment. And it was a one-bedroom apartment, and I had at least one roommate the whole time. And sometimes we had five of us in there because one of the girls worked for Alaska Airlines, and stewardesses would come into town and have to stay over the weekend or something like that. So we had visitors on and off all the time. Very fun thing. Other jobs, I worked for Piggly Wiggly for a little while. I worked for George Yeager, who was a lawyer. And then I got offered a job at Pan American Airlines. And so I worked in their ticket office. I started work 2 days after I got married to John Nichols and quit a week before my first son was born.
Mm-hmm. What year was that? What year did you get married?
I got married in 1962.
62.
And Mark was born in 1965. And I met John through friends. One of my jobs for a little while was with an architect, and he was working for a contractor who had a office below the architect's office, and a friend was of his was also working at the contracting company. And I'd met those people, and so when John came back into town, he'd been down in Kwajalein working for Burgess Construction, building Nike sites in Kwajalein. So we married in 62, and Mark was born in 95, and Tim was born in 65, and Tim was born in 67, and the twins were born in 71. So we had four boys. And Mark had a sledding accident and was killed in 1982, January of 82. Yeah, he was 16.
What a tragedy.
It was a tragedy. Mm-hmm. So Pan American I worked for several years, and then, as I say, quit just before the first baby, and so then I stayed home with the kids and got involved with volunteering at the school and volunteering with youth hockey because John had played hockey. John actually came to Alaska and to Fairbanks. Well, he went to Anchorage first in 1949, and then the following year came up to Fairbanks and went to University of Alaska and graduated in 1954. So he'd had quite a long career before I met him. He had played hockey in for the university in 52 through 54. And so when the boys were growing up, they started playing as youngsters. And John did some of the coaching, and I was a hockey mom, and I did quite a lot of paperwork. I did computers were just... Well, I started on a typewriter because Tim was the first hockey player, and that was in 71. So I probably didn't do a whole lot to start with having the twins. Mm-hmm. But they were skating on a backyard rink when they were four, so that was 75. So, and I got... using the typewriter, made rosters and wrote a newsletter and that kind of thing, paperwork kind of thing. And when computers came in the early 80s, I switched to the computer. So that gave me another skill. And the only career that I can actually call a career was when I went to work in... 1987 for United Way of the Tenino Valley.
Oh, you did.
And I was volunteering at the Breast Cancer Detection Center, moving all their records, paper records, onto a computer. Mm-hmm. And they mentioned that across the street, United Way was looking for office help. So I went and interviewed and was hired the next day, so that was my sole claim to.
How long did you stay there?
9 years.
9 years. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful organization.
It is, yeah.
To this day.
Yeah. And there were only two of us when I went there, Debbie Tilsworth and myself. And then we grew. And then... In 1996, I retired, and John had just retired a couple of years before, and we did a trip to England, but on his return, he found... Well, he knew about it. He hadn't told me. He'd found a tumor in his lymph nodes, and it was actually lung cancer. And they gave him 3 months, but he lived another year. And boys were all out at college, the three boys. And so they came back and visited, and that was a trying year.
I bet it was.
He died in 97, and so I stayed on at the house. I big house with mm-hmm. just me, and the boys went to colleges outside. Mm-hmm. Their dad told them that they could go wherever they could get into, so they naturally wanted to see the big world.
Mm-hmm. Good for them.
And so I, on retirement, I was already involved with, I'm trying to think exactly, I don't remember. I had various interests in helping with various nonprofits. But continued to get involved, and I'm trying to think when I started. Oh, it wasn't until about 2006 that I got involved with Alaska International Senior Games, and I've just sort of retiring from that. I've still got a few projects that mm-hmm. I'm working on, but I'm not on the board anymore. And I've been a Parks and Rec commissioner since, well, it must be 30 years-ish, long time.
Wow.
I've been helped with various things that are temporary or one-time events, Northern Alaska Environmental Center. And when I was on the Parks and Rec Commission early on, they, in fact, it was 1989, they, the Fairbanks Garden Club came to the commission and wanted to adopt Weeks Field because they wanted a place for a rose garden to honor their members. And so I was appointed liaison from the commission to the Weeks Field Community Park Association, and became their treasurer. So I'm still their treasurer. The park is the adoption is finished because we were allowed to place 200 honor plaques with plantings and benches and other items in the park. And so we're winding down from that, but I've got a couple of projects there that I need to finish
too. That's a wonderful addition to the community.
It's very well used,
yes,
and it's
lovely.
It is, and the members of the garden club had a group of gardeners who were very active in keeping it maintained and planting things and just keeping it looking good. And the Parks and Rec Department mowed and eventually had to take over the watering because gardening volunteers weren't able to recruit younger members that could take it over.
Can you maybe tell us what a fondest memory?
That's difficult.
That was the hard question.
Yeah, right? that is difficult. When I was when my 75th birthday was coming up, I decided I wanted to host a family trip, and I contacted a Dutch aqua tour, they called it, on the water, so you could rent a barge, and they had bicycles, and so the barge fed you morning and night and gave you food to make your own packed lunch. And we got off the boat in the morning and cycled to the next place the barge would overnight, and we'd join them and have dinner. And it started in Ghent in Belgium. And so my sister and her husband, well, I should say that there were 20 of us on the boat. Yeah. So there were my three sons and two wives and two grandchildren. And then my sister, my middle sister, Barbara, her three sons, their wives, and two of whom live in Stockholm, and they each had two boys, and one still lives in England, and they don't have any kids. But so that made 20 of us, and that was really the greatest fun.
That's a wonderful idea to get everybody together. One time. Yeah, what a memory.
Yeah. So. We've had another reunion in Albuquerque where my middle sister lives. My younger sister lives in Vancouver, BC, and we had the reunion there, and she was actually 80 in January of that year, but she didn't want a birthday party. But we were doing it sort of at a significant ages. So, but her son was 60, so they called it her son's birthday party. But the same crowd came, mm-hmm. and we had hoped my brother and his wife would be able to come to the barge trip, but he'd been suffering from cancer for quite a while, and he had a resurgence that meant he couldn't come. Mm-hmm. That would have made 22 of us. But we filled the barge. There wasn't anyone else on the barge, so it was a real family trip.
How long was the trip?
It was 10 or 11 days.
Oh, that's a nice long trip. Yeah. What a wonderful memory.
Yeah.
I hope you took lots of pictures.
Well, I didn't take pictures, you know. John used to take the pictures, uh-huh. and so I never... Now, I still have trouble remembering, mm-hmm. Even though I've got an iPhone that I right. can pull out and snap something, it's always the back of somebody's head.
Well, somebody probably did take a lot of pictures during that trip.
Oh, yeah, we do have a lot of pictures.
Well recorded, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, can you tell us about how you came to be at Raven's Landing?
I have to tell you, Terry, it's Raven Landing.
Raven Landing.
How not Ravens.
Raven Landing.
I'm sorry to
okay.
say that.
Okay.
I say to people, it's only one Raven.
One Raven landed here.
I only hear one out here, so I think we only have one.
Raven Landing.
Yeah. Karen Parr had come up with the idea with Marian Einiger, and it was 2000 or 2001, very early on, mm-hmm. and it was just a work in progress for so long. And Karen had monthly meetings in various places around town. We met in the borough mayor's office sometimes, and then we met at the Carol Bryce Center. So we talked about what we wanted here, and there was a long list, and we wanted bathroom doors that didn't open inwards, so if somebody fell just inside, you could get into the mm-hmm. door, and we have sliding doors, and somebody else didn't like the little tiny locks on sliding doors, so they're not locked, which solves the problem. And so that was I came sometimes, not always, and it was quite a steady bunch of people, and I'm sure we all thought that someday we'd move here, and that's the way it was. Someday I'll want to move here. Well, I think, I moved in here in 2013, but probably about 2011 or so, I started thinking about getting out of the house, emptying the house, so that the boys didn't have to do it. And one of the boys said, well, I could empty the house in 2 weeks. So that scared me. So that was a push. But there was, you know, it was a big house and there was a crawl space under it and it was full too. So I started getting rid of things, and the boys came up in 2012, a couple of them at one time, and they, I had a big furniture I knew I didn't want, and I hadn't decided for sure to move here or whether to buy a condo, but I started working on it, but it wasn't until January of 2013 that I decided I can't be bothered to buy a condo and learn how to do that, a one-time skill. And I started seriously to decide to move here. And I, it was the third building, and we didn't know if there would be a fourth. So I put my name in and chose an apartment and started getting rid of stuff, downsizing. Mm-hmm. And it was, I really haven't quite finished because I brought boxes with paperwork in it. Mm-hmm. And I keep so busy volunteering that I'd much rather volunteer than
go through the boxes.
So it's not getting done very quickly, but it's on my list. So I just suddenly decided I'm not going to get out of this house unless I decide what to do, and I'll come here, and I haven't regretted a minute.
Good. That was the next question. Can you tell us about your experience here?
Well, this is independent living, and you can be just as independent as you wish. You're pampered. You have six meals a week. You have your utilities all paid for. You have light housekeeping every other week. You have cable television, which I've never had before, and phone service, and I can come and go as I please. My car, I've never had a car in a warm garage, so I'm perfectly happy with a carport that keeps the snow off it. And we have help, and we have activities and encouragement to exercise. Mm-hmm. And there's a movie once a week on Thursday nights. It almost has offering more, but there are people who can't get out. So, and I've taken on several volunteer activities here to help when I can see something that needs doing.
So it's been a good choice for you.
It's been a very good choice for me.
Well, I'm so glad. That's what I hear from everyone who lives here. They're glad they made the choice.
Yeah.
And they have a last question listed here. What is or was your favorite age and why?
Oh, my goodness. Never thought about that. Well, you know, I think maybe I started playing hockey when I was 45.
Oh, good for you.
And that was a lot of fun. I played hockey for 9 years.
Well, good for you. Oh, I didn't know that.
And I was not exactly in the very beginnings of it, but very close to the beginnings of it. And there again, I did the rosters and the schedules and did a lot of the grunt work, mm-hmm. getting it going. And one of the things that I started doing with the youth hockey was another friend had started calling scores after the games into the Newsminer, so they printed them the next day. And she did it for 2 or 3 years, and then I started. And so when women's hockey started, I included women's hockey, and then I thought I better include men's hockey. And that was quite a challenge. I had to sometimes call bars to find coaches so that I could get the scores, so I could get them in the paper.
To track people down.
It was, it was a lot of fun. And then another good year was I decided to stop playing hockey in favor of downhill skiing, which I had done very little of when I was, before I married John. In fact, he was a ski patrol, and that was part of the encouragement to start skiing. And I broke my ankle in 1961, and he took me to the hospital. That was before we were engaged even. I guess we got engaged later that year and then married the next year. So skiing was, when I was early 50s when I did that. And but the skating, the fact that I'd been skating was very helpful with the skiing because the stop is similar. And of course, everybody else that was skiing was expert. Mm-hmm. The kids all expert by then. And I started because they would go to Alyeska twice a year at Christmas and then spring break. I better start, otherwise they'll all be gone and I'll be left at home alone. So that was why I started skiing, and it was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
Well, you're very adventuresome to start those kind of things at that time of life. A lot of people are stopping those things at that time of life.
Well, I stopped skiing early. I dislocated a shoulder.
I was going to say, what injury did you have?
Yeah, and that did slow me down. I did have one exciting thing happen skiing, and that was when we were at Alyeska in 1999, and they had an avalanche, and it got me. I was at the top of the hill and just starting to come down, and there's a short slope and then a flat area, and two snowboarders, first one and then the other, went by yelling avalanche, and I was poling as fast on this flat spot. Of course, I don't zoom down hills. Mm-hmm. I take my time, and so I was just pushing as hard as I could with my poles, and I looked around and I could see the snow coming.
Wow.
I got my left arm and my ski pole up in the air, pointed to the sky in case it covered me, mm-hmm. which it didn't quite do. It came up to my very stretched chin.
Oh, my stars.
And so I could breathe, and I had one arm to move. And one of the snowboarders came back and helped me dig out, and then ski patrol came by and said, "Are you all right?" And I was all right, so they went off to see if anybody else was buried. I was skiing with Bill James at the time, and he'd gone ahead of me, of course, and I didn't appear around the corner, and he figured I'd fallen, so he came back to find me buried.
Wow, what an experience.
Yeah, that was that very memorable moment.
Did anybody else get hurt? Or?
Another girl got covered further down, but she said she had her Walkman in her hands, and she just had it held up in front of her that kept the snow off her face, and they got to her right away. They'd seen it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, what an experience.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for this really great interview, and really appreciate getting some time with you. And this will go in the university archives and hopefully into a Raven Landing book eventually.
Good. Very good.
Thank you very much.